CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
To HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Janet Flynn will be telling us a little bit about Prosper Canada.
So what can you tell me about the impact Prosper can have on persons with disabilities?
Yeah, Cam, so at Prosper Canada, I'm not sure if you're familiar with our work. We were founded in 1986, and we're Canada's leading financial empowerment champion. So what we do is we work with partners in all sectors. So we're hoping to ensure that all Canadians, regardless of their income, have access to things such as financial programs, products, services, really advice that they would need to be able to build their financial well-being. And the department that I manage is called Technology-Enabled Financial Empowerment. And we are focused on working with people who are living on low income, people who are living with a disability, and organizations that support people to get access to benefits. And we work with them to build technology tools to be able to help people, learn about what benefits are out there, learn about, whether they're eligible for them, find out how they would need to apply for them. A lot of other things, too, that Prosper Canada has beyond my department, which essentially is helping people take charge of their spending, become aware of what their financial situation is, be able to do that all by themselves, but yet know where to go to if they need help. And so specifically, if we're talking what we do for people living with a disability is we've developed a number of technology tools that can be used by individuals themselves who are living with a disability or family members who might be helping someone, caregivers, organizations that, work with people living with a disability to help them get access. And those two tools are called the Benefits Wayfinder and the Disability Benefits Compass.
So how do you reach out to folks with disabilities to let them know that your work exists and might be of benefit to them?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do that in a few different ways. One way is strictly, through the organizations that we work with. So our organization doesn't do direct one-on-one work with living with a disability or the community members themselves. We work with organizations. So what we do is we work with the organizations to help train them on these tools, which then they subsequently then reach out and are available within their community for assistance for people. We also do work directly with people living with a disability when we do research or we do development of these type of things. And so, for example, the Disability Benefit Compass tool, which was launched a couple of years ago, we worked with people living with a disability in British Columbia and two organizations, DABC, Disability Alliance BC, and Plan Institute. And they were involved in what we call co-creation or service design. So right from, the very beginning, learning about, what their needs are, what would be of use for them, what would they like to see in a tool to help them with access to benefits, and they worked with us right through the end-to-end process to identify, you know, what was lacking, what was needed, designing the tool, the prototype testing of the tool, and then finally the launch of the tool, and then the post-launch, you know, feedback. So there's those two different ways, through the organizations that support people living with disability, but also when we do direct research or development with people living with disability. Of course, we have our website, which is, everything that's on there is free for download or viewing or use. There's just a few courses that are more geared toward organizations that have a very low cost, but all of the resources that Prosper Canada offers for really anybody, to be honest, you don't have to be living on low income or moderate income or living with a disability. It's really, you know, beneficial for everybody, but there are, of course, those things that are specifically of interest and can be very beneficial for use for people living with a disability.
So do you find that when you work with partners to encourage them to embrace the ideas of greater accessibility and greater support for persons with disabilities, do you find that they're typically responsive to those ideals?
Oh, absolutely. And what we actually find is that we are approached by those organizations who are already serving people living with a disability and or who are interested in enhancing their services to provide support for people living with a disability. So it kind of goes both ways. We do have within Prosper Canada a system change, or if you will, like a policy team, who are always out working with the government and all organizations, including obviously organizations that are focused on people living with a disability and all of the needs and accessibility for that community. So they, from that level, are also working to forward and advance, supports for people living with disability. So it really goes both ways. So I guess to answer your question, Cam, yes, organizations are more than motivated and inspired and wanting to do that type of work and support.
So in your time doing this work and with Prosper Canada, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So one of the tools that we have is called the Benefits Wayfinder. And that tool was designed, it was actually designed way back by doctors at the University of Toronto and the University Health Network and some other organizations. Because they just identified that there was a need from a holistic health perspective to identify folks that were, living in poverty and would need to sort of, as part of their overall wellness, the element of the finances. And so they had created a paper-based tool to screen for people living in poverty and to be able to help them identify benefits that they might be able to get. Through the course of a number of years and working with Prosper Canada, that was developed to an online tool. And that tool has since been expanded upon and has over 400 benefits, including what we call starting points, which has different life situations or life transitions, of which one of them is disability supports. And folks can go onto that tool, and there's four different ways that they can search for benefits. They can either just browse all benefits if they've heard of something that's new, like, for example, recently there was the Canadian Dental Plan that was identified, so they can say, I just heard about that, I'm going to look it up and see what that's about. Or they can go in and put what benefits they already have. They might say, I've got everything I need. I don't think there's anything out there more for me. But they can put in what they have, and it'll also identify, are there any other benefits, because they have those, that they now, in effect, might have eligibility for. They can also create complete a 13-question air online, which doesn't capture any personal information or store any of their personal or private information, but it will give a more customized listing based on their own situation of benefits that they can review and see if there's any that they don't have that they might be eligible for, and learn about how to apply for them. That has been a great success. Each year we get feedback from folks who are using it to improve upon it. But it has been a very, very good success and definitely a tool in the toolkit, if you will, for organizations that are helping folks who are living on low income or people living with disability get access to benefits. Or as I said, it can be used, of course, individually by those who are wanting to learn more about access to benefits.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, Stephanie Ernst will be telling us about TAP support. So what can you tell me about TAP support?
Well, basically, we're an organization. We started around 4 years ago, almost 5 years ago. We are based in the Netherlands, and what we look at is promoting research into the complications of twins who share a placenta. There are four main rare diseases that affect twins who share a placenta. There is twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome. There is selective fetal growth restriction, twin reverse arterial perfusion, which is very, very rare. And then our core focus is something called twin anemia polycythemia sequence. And that happens in around 3 to 5% of twins who share a placenta.
So what are some of the key symptoms these twins have to deal with?
Oh, well, basically, it's really interesting because it's diagnosed in utero, but there are actually no physical symptoms either to the parent, to the twins. But one twin will become anemic, chronically anemic, over a long period of time. And the other twin will become polycythemic, meaning they have blood that's really thick, kind of like ketchup or molasses. And this can cause problems in utero. Obviously, one twin can become hydropic, so they get excess fluid around their organs. And it can lead to the death of one of the twins, or both, if it's not detected early enough. So it's detected by something called a... Oh, sorry.
That's all right. I was just kind of wondering, how do you reach out to those affected? Being a rare condition, can't imagine that... there's too many out there.
No, well, that's really kind of it. It's what we do is we try and have a very good social online presence. We also capitalize on things like Google searches and things like that. And we try to bring everyone together and connect them with a group that's the most appropriate for them. We also have a Facebook community that we try to bring people into. And that's to really help them connect with each other. And we have members from across the world. We have pretty much every country, which is really amazing. It's kind of like, it is a very much an online community, just something we're very passionate about.
So I'd imagine there's a huge mental health sort of relief in a way, realizing they're not the only ones dealing with this condition. Having that online support would seem to be quite beneficial in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things is, of course, as we all know, anyone who has a rare condition, they're finding the people online and finding the community that can really relate to what you're going through is so important. And to be able to find someone across the world or in the next suburb. I mean, we've had members in our community who live 5 minutes away find each other in our community. But then we've talked to people across the world. I have friends who live in the UK, who are living in Australia, which is where I'm from, but I live in the Netherlands, who all have been diagnosed with this condition, and knowing that you're not alone is so important.
So, in your time with TAP support, has there been any success moment or story that stands out for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we started as a little online group, 10 people, 7 years ago. And that was really all we were. We're just an online community. And from that, we really kind of started talking. We started growing. And from that, that's where our foundation was actually born from, was this online community. There are other communities out there, obviously, for people who have identical twins. There are communities out there for people who have had twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome. but there was nothing really specifically for TAPS, and there is such a lack of research. And so growing a community that became a foundation that is now funding research into more information about TAPS, I think is like one of the biggest highlights I think I've ever had. But also just having the people supporting us so we are able to fund these research projects. And a couple of years ago, we funded a very big research project, which was about lactate acidosis and hypoglycemia in donor twins and how it may be linked to some of the problems they have. And so that was a really huge moment for us. We were able to contribute to research that helps our twins even further along.
So that being the case, do you work in partnership with any other organizations?
We work in partnership with several organizations, but I think one of the most ones I'm most proud of is actually we work very closely with the fetal medicine team in Leiden, the Netherlands, at the Leiden University Medical Center. And they are one of our biggest partners and also one of our biggest supporters, because we believe in evidence-based information, but having a connection to a research team and being able to support them as they find out more answers about our disease, but also being able to access that evidence-based information is really important.
So are there any projects on the horizon for the year ahead?
Yeah, absolutely. We are looking now at funding another study, our second study, which is called the WellBe study. And that one really dives into care pathways for parents who have been diagnosed with a rare complication of monochorionic twins. And it will look at how the care pathways can be improved and how they can be better supported within the system. And we will be working on that one with the Leiden University Medical Center team.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need to keep pushing forward in research, what would you say?
Oh, I have lots to say, but I'll try and keep it short. One of the big things I think that is really important is that patient organizations and medical teams and researchers really need to work together. The future of research is becoming so much more patient-centric, and I think it's really, really vital that together we work together and we make these research outcomes that suit the questions that families have, but also work towards improving outcomes and making people, answering the questions that parents have, but also improving the outcomes for our families. Because, you know, research shouldn't stop when children turn two or once the babies are born. It should continue through their lives. And we need those answers so that we can make sure that, number one, babies born with TAPS survive, and number two, that they have the best possible treatment and parents can make the most informed decisions they can, supported by research.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem, Scott.
Thanks.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Tune in every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. to CGEM's Top 12 Countdown. I'm your host, Taya, and every week we will be counting down CGEM's most played albums of the week. You'll hear from a variety of genres, lots of local music, and our programmers' favorite tunes. CGEM's Top 12 only plays the best of the best, so tune in every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. only on CGEM 99.1 FM, reaching higher ground in Windsor and in Detroit.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Janet Flynn told us a little bit about Prosper Canada, and we heard about TAPS support from Stephanie Ernst.
In this segment of our show, Jeff Thiessen will be giving us an update on Thrive magazine. So what were some of the high points for Thrive this year?
Yeah, Cam, that's a great question. I mean, what I love most is interviewing folks for our cover story, and we had some really compelling stories this year, but also we launched a podcast, and it started out a little bit slow as I got my legs underneath me. Started monthly, which sometimes it was every 5 or 6 weeks, but that really picked up as the year went on. And as people were listening, we're really starting to gain a great listenership. It's called Life and Limb, about living well with limb loss. And that was a real highlight. Just having conversations like you have with people, very personal. With the podcast, you've got a little bit more time to get in depth, but it's amazing how fast 35 or 40 minutes can go when you're hearing a good story. So, yeah, the podcast was something we're really proud of from this year.
So, do you find that people are more open to talking about issues like limb loss if it's presented in a cool, sort of relatable way? I mean, people will tend to ignore a statistic, but if you put a human face on it in a real-life story, that might open some more doors.
I mean, that is one of the cornerstones or pillars of my career in media and communications. Numbers, they have a place in infographics, but it's that authenticity. And, you know, with our work with Mindset and the learning course for disability education, we really lean into that. And, it's not just about someone's story, but it's meeting them and getting that familiarity or that comfortability with them. But also, it's about how, the usual suspects like unconscious bias and disability language and disability etiquette and ableism. You know, folks in the DEI space, they know what that is, but do they really know how that impacts us as people with disabilities? And I think when those stories are told, not from a confrontational standpoint, but just from a lived experience perspective, I really think that, to use a football phrase, moves the chains, moves the yardsticks.
So what's interesting about that is, for those who might be checking out your publication or your podcast for the first time, they might come to realize very quickly the issues they're dealing with aren't limited to them. Being on your own in the disabilities world can be an isolating thing, but when you realize that there's at least one other, the world's suddenly a much bigger place.
100%. I mean, that peer support is so key, and appropriate peer support too, age-related or disability-relevant. And we certainly hear that in the amputee community. And what surprises me still is, generally expects to lose a limb. And when that happens, they feel very alone and isolated, almost, and I know this is an exaggeration, but almost like they're the only ones. And, you can find resources online, of course, but it's connecting with others that have been down that journey or that pathway that can, share some optimism, some encouragement. And on the other hand, too, kind of highlight some of the bumps and obstacles that you're going to encounter as an amputee, specifically, and I'm sure that applies to other disabilities as well. So, yeah, as digital as life is for us all, the human element is, for me, is so important.
So, is there a particular story from this year that really stands out for you?
Question too. Someone that it surprised me I hadn't met or heard of before. Her name is Krista Couture, and she's an amputee, childhood amputation from cancer, and she talks about that as her cure. That was her cure for cancer. She's gone through incredible loss throughout her life, that the amputation included divorces, loss of two children at very young ages, infants. And her perspective on how she got through that. She's a musician, a broadcaster, and now she's the host of AMI Plus's Postcards From. It's a travel story or travel docuseries that looks at different locations, destinations in Canada from a real senses perspective, taste, hearing, smell, and all of that is designed to be inclusive. So that listeners with visual impairment or viewers with visual impairment can really experience what she's experiencing in the moment. And, she talked about how did she get through it at times, hour by hour. At times it was binging a lot of television, but it was just patience and time that had brought her out of a lot of darkness. And she's doing a lot of great things now
What's on tap for Thrive for the new year?
Right now we're quite excited about something we've never done before, and that's a resource guide. So we're launching that. It's intended to be our last issue of 2024, but likely, with postage strike, be out in, hopefully, in January. And it's not so much about listings of products and services, but we went back and over our 29 issues and kind of pulled the highlights of lifestyle and peer support content. So it's something that I hope people value, whatever stage or age they are in you know, their amputee journey, to reflect and again, new perspectives, things we've shared, like I say, in the past, but some of the highlights of in the life of Thrive, you might say.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Always a pleasure, Cam. Thanks.
Of course.
My friends, the new year almost upon us. I see a world of possibilities opening up for persons with disabilities. We've made some great progress this past year. However, it's incumbent upon each one of us not to rest on our laurels and say, we've done enough. That's good enough for the disability community. For the fact is, the policies and practices put in place this year must be continued to be monitored and regulated for the days to come. The projects on the horizon for people like Jeff, creating educational resources, putting them together for folks with disabilities, we can always be looking at a project like that and saying, what's the next step? What more can we add? What details can we refine? And honestly, it's an exciting thing. It's an amazing thing to see the seeds of what we plant today coming together to be something beautiful for tomorrow. The truth is, a new year is also a time to do better by individuals with disabilities. If we look at this past year, and all the controversy surrounding the Canada Disability Benefit, we have to ask ourselves, do we really want that to be the best we can do? Should we keep the momentum going? Should we continue to press leaders to do better by persons with disabilities? Make sure this benefit and those like it continue to keep up with inflation, continue to keep people out of poverty. Give individuals with disabilities the best chance to work and to live and to contribute. But not just contribute. Do so in a meaningful way, to be part of the community, to feel that sense of inclusion I talked about with Jeff, the understanding that you're not the only one facing these issues can be eye-opening, it can be game-changing, but it has to come down to individuals working together, people recognizing the mutual need and the mutual strength out there. We can take support in one another, but in the disability community, does come down to working with the abilities you've been given, and recognizing the gifts of others, and asking the question, how can what I do match what they're doing to create a stronger, more united disability community? And honestly, it is together that we make change. For the year ahead, who knows what will be accomplished on behalf of persons with disabilities. I myself am eager to see benefits increased, resources created, people just recognizing that individuals with disabilities belong in the community. And in other words, they are the community. For disability is the thread that weaves through every facet of life. You go back in any family, you will find someone with a disability. It's just a question of recognition at the time and the circumstance, and asking the question of what supports that they receive. So, my question to you is, what will you do to better the disability community for the year ahead? This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.